Either I control my attitude or it controls me. Either I control my attitude or it controls me. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with an instant inspiration. Either I control my attitude or it controls me. Now, we know how true that is. We have seen it happen in our lives. We have seen it happen in circumstances that we say are beyond our control. Well, not really. All these circumstances are right within our control. We just have not taken charge. We were driving down the street today. I was coming back from town, and I was at an intersection out on the highway, and after we left El Cajon, and all of a sudden the traffic stopped on the other side. And so everybody in our side started slowing down to look, and happily they all pulled toward the center. So I just went shoot, right on by, and while they were leathernecking or looking at what was going on, I skidded along. Now, skidded along wasn't the right word. I flew along. And so, as I flew along, I said to myself, all is in divine order right now. All is in divine order. I wasn't thinking about my own trip. I wasn't thinking about my own car, my own activity, but I was thinking about whatever was going on over there. All is in divine order. And then I came to another intersection, and here were 40 black and whites, 40 police cars. And I thought, my goodness sakes, why are there 40 police cars? And then there were six fire engines who were, the boys were cleaning up the weeds in the middle of the road, and just all sorts of fascinating things going on there. And I watched this, and, I didn't watch it. I mean, it just flipped by my eye, and I caught it out of my peripheral vision, because I have such fantastic peripheral vision. And so I didn't label any of it at the time. I just observed it and went my way, blessing it, seeing all in divine order. And so it was. So it was. Most people see an accident and they immediately say, oh, what happened? Who got killed? Who got hurt? What's going on? What's the problem? My wife, she called today in all harmony and all love and all joy, and she says, you got to pray for your brother. You got to call him. And I said, why should I call my brother? Well, there's a hurricane heading toward Virginia, and he lives in Virginia. I said, Virginia is pretty big. And he lives in the Shenandoah Valley, which is between, inland, away from the ocean, and they have never had any hurricanes, never had any winds of any degree at all there. It's a very calm and peaceful place. She said, oh, I didn't know that. And I said, if you're not careful, you'll be putting a negative cause in motion and causing problems for people instead of being a solution for them. Now, I said, what you could do is to say, I surround you, Howie and Audrey, and all of your family with my pure white light of love. All your ways are peace and all your paths are pleasant. I said, it'd be so easy to say that. She said, yes, I know. She said, but it's going up to Washington, D.C., too, and they're getting ready to guard themselves against the hurricane in Washington, D.C. And I said, come on now. What are you doing? What are you saying? Are you creating this in Washington? Are you creating this in Virginia? Why are you creating this? That's what the television said, and that's what is all, everybody's seeing. And I said, well, all it takes is one person to see all in harmony, all in peace, all in love. Just one person, and it's over. It's over. Everything is in perfect order. Now think about that. Everything is in perfect order because one person said, there is peace on earth, and it began with me. Just one person. That's all it takes. All is in divine order, and it is done. You see, you're in a virgin field. You're in an untried field. You're in a field where nobody else is competing against you, because everybody else is looking to see what's going on, You know what's going on, and you're putting the cause in motion. All is in divine order. Now think of this here. This is our good statement here. Either I control my attitude, or my attitude controls me. We all have that privilege. What kind of a trip did I have in town? A glorious trip. Did I have the traffic lanes open before me in freedom to zip along? Sure did. Did I have a lot of fun? Sure did. Was I singing and was I joyous and was I happy? Sure was. Did I care whether anybody heard me or not? Sure didn't. I was for me alone. And I wasn't disturbing anyone on the freeway or on the highway. I was just doing my own thing, having a lot of fun, with a good attitude about everybody. And I saw these different cars as they were going by and watching me in my little convertible Miata, just enjoying it so. And I know that they were wishing that they were there. And so I just mentally invited them. And they said, another time, another time. And isn't that what we do with our attitudes? We say, another time I'll take charge. Another time I'll be the master. Now, Sylvia, do you have the ability? Do you have the ability with your attitude to stop eating when you're done? Or do you continue to eat to clean your plate because that's what you've been taught to do? You see, your attitude teaches you to clean your plate and you know, not take more than you can eat and so forth. And that's your attitude. But why? Why don't you eat until you're full? Because you might have misjudged. You might have taken two potatoes when you only wanted a half of one, you know. But just eat what pleases you and stop. Now, you don't stop because you have to stop. You stop because you're pleasantly pleased. Your tummy is satisfied. It doesn't need any more. It takes 20 minutes, they say, for our stomach to tell us when we're full. So meanwhile, we've really tanked up. It's time that we stop tanking up and start realizing we really don't need that much food. And it's a wonderful thing. I went into the doctor's office, and the girl saw me coming, and she says, aren't you about ready to take your trip to Europe? And I thought, how wonderful. She does not remember me as a person who came in there for any other reason than to take a trip to Europe, than to have my shots and to have the whatever the pills are that are required for that trip. She didn't think of anything else. She just said, when are you taking that trip to Europe? That's going to be such fun. And the nurse who checked with me, she said, you know, I'm leaving tomorrow. And I said, are you quitting? She said, no, I'm taking the day off. And I said, well, how wonderful. She says, I'm going down to Mission Beach, and I'm going to drive my car in a derby down there. Mm-hmm. And it is going to be such fun. She says, I'm taking the day off. I said, well, you don't have to go very far, do you? That's kind of nice. And she says, nope. And she says, and I'm very happy about it. She says, the last time I ever let somebody manipulate my life was when I was 17. And since that time, I've always said, I am master of my attitude. I said, hey, that's a great statement to make. You know, that's the type of thing that I like to make. And she says, well, I am master of my attitude. She says, that's how my husband and I get along so well. Because when I want to go play, he says, yes. And when he wants to go to play, I say, yes. And we just love to play and do these things. And we have lots of toys that we play with. And she was just a young woman, maybe 25, 23, 25, you know. But and then as I was driving down the freeway, I looked to my right, and here was this gigantic Ford 250 or something like that, red, you know, just it's a pickup, it's a truck, just a glow. And behind it, on a trailer, was a water scooter. You know, one of these things that you sit on and you drive it in the ocean, and beautiful red. And then I looked at the guy sitting at the wheel. He must have been 30 years old at least. And, you know, just a little buffed, you know, and he was just going out and doing this thing. Here he is, no older than that, earning enough money to have a beautiful truck like that, earning enough money to have a beautiful water ski deal thing like that. It's not just a water ski, it's a water vehicle, you know. And if I knew further, if I chose to, we would find he lives in a very lovely home, and he has a very beautiful wife, and he has perhaps a child or two, and he has an excellent job. He has an excellent job that pays him so well, he can have all those toys. Now, we watched a movie the other night. It was called Holiday, remember? And in the movie, it was Cary Grant, I believe. Cary Grant was a young man, and he did backflips. He was just a crazy guy. And he fell in love with this rich girl and was going to marry her. And the rich girl says, you will take the job in the bank, and you will do this, and you will do that. And he said, I think I'm on the wrong tree here someplace. And he said, what I plan to do is that I plan to take a vacation now. I plan to take, I don't know how long, months or whatever.
More.
And go on a honeymoon. And so his father-in-law, who's a banker, said, well, now, you'll go to here, and you'll meet this aunt, and you'll meet this banker, and you'll meet these people. These are all important people to know, and you'll get to know them. He said, no. I'm going on the honeymoon for me. And I'm going to go and do what I want to do. And the father-in-law-to-be said, no, you can't do that. And he was going to do his own thing. Well, finally he did. And when he did, of course, as all movies can end as fairy tales, you know, everybody's happy and getting what they want. He left his girlfriend because his girlfriend was not interested in what he was interested in. And he fell in love subconsciously with his girlfriend's sister, who was a real cool girl. Then his friends that he was raised by, who, because his parents died when he was just a child, they're a professor at the university and so forth, and they were just going to take a trip to Europe. And so he went with them and sailed with them. And as he was standing in the hallway, being so happy, knowing that he's going to sail, he did a backflip. And then just that moment, his beloved girlfriend's sister came in, and he did another backflip and flopped right down on the floor. He didn't make a good flip. And she came up to him, and she says, I'm here. And he said, wow, you know, gave her a big hug, and the program ended. You know the rest of the story. You see, it's all attitude. Now, he could, it's a story, we know that. But he could have gone to do what his father-in-law wanted him to do. He could have had lots of money. He could have had all this and manipulation and control. And what would he have gotten from him? Would he have been a happy guy? Would he have been fulfilled in any way? What would his attitude be? His attitude would be that he hates the business. Here he's making a mint off it, but he hates the business. The president, chairman of the board of the New York Stock Exchange, just resigned from his position as president and chairman of the board. He established the company not too many years ago and spearheaded it and made it into a multi-billion dollar operation. And part of his gift from the board of directors was money each year for the work he was doing, because he was just a magic person with money. And so this year, I'm not quoting this right, but this year his gift was $240 million. You know, give or take a few. That's approximately what it was. And so the press didn't like that. They thought that that was outrageous, that any one man for any one job would get it. But they don't realize what he did with the stock exchange. And they set up a bunch of nonsense, and so then the people started asking questions, and then the federal government had no complaint because it was purely above board. Everything was out. And so he says, okay, I resign, and I'll take my $240 million. And he took 240. I mean, what the heck? He started the stock exchange if he wants. You know, it's beautiful. But people have a good attitude. They just go from better to better. And our friend, what was his name in Macintosh?
Stephen Jobs.
Come.
Stephen Jobs?
Jobs, yeah. Yeah, Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs quit Macintosh. No, you got to listen to the story. Because he wanted to do some other things. And things were not going his way. And then they called him back. They wanted him to go back. And so he went back. And he just made the thing go grow. Because now he had had the experience of being his own master as his attitude. I don't care. Doesn't bother me. So I'm going to go back there, and I'm just going to pull out all the stops and be fantastic, be magic, be marvelous. Not quite as much as Heinz and Gregor would like him to be, because what they'd like him to be is more, compliant with other, like PCs and so forth, you know, where you can mutually reach across the programs. But he came back, and he didn't care. He didn't have anybody to please. They wanted him. So, oh, you want me? I'll take how I am. And he came back there, and the first thing he did is start to make magic with Apple and Mac by making new designs, by bringing out quality that they had never known. In fact, the stuff that Apple is made of these days is something that everybody emulates and wishes they were. And it's a fascinating thing. But you see, his attitude was, hey, I'm going to be myself and have fun. He may not have verbalized it like that, but that's what he did. And the people love him. The people love him. Apple has like that with value, and their stock is just going up right through the roof. And it is beautiful. Now, if they can do it, find out how they did it. What did Steve Jobs do that allowed him to do that? Can you tell me?
Good fun.
Yeah, come on, loud.
He had the right attitude.
We had the right attitude. What was the right attitude?
He was master of his attitude.
His right attitude was, I'm going to do it for myself. I don't care. I don't care what you ask me to do. I'm going to do it my way, you know? And he wasn't doing it badly, otherwise they wouldn't call him back. But he's master of his attitude and doing it his way, and he's a winner. Now, why do people hate Bill Gates? Because Bill Gates doesn't care. Bill Gates loves his software. He loves his programming. He loves his business. But he doesn't have to hurt anybody else to make his business grow. He would rather go out and help everybody. And then his business would really grow, you know. Because by the time he gets done helping everybody and showing them the way, it opens up. Now, to close our evening sharing together here, I had a very interesting feeling about our friend Gray Davis. He is the governor of California. And because of the time and the circumstances and everything else, the state budget went kaplooey, you know. And it happened in other states too. And it happened in other nations and other countries. Many countries went kaflooey. But he did a good job. He did as good a job as anyone could have. He was not a personality boy like Reagan or something, you know, where you have to like him regardless of how dumb he is. But he just was a very competent, good fellow. So they want to have a recall on him. And so for the recall, he merely responded to the recall by saying, that's whatever you want to do, you recall. But you're not going to change it with any new people. No one is going to take you out of the hole. It's going to be a gradual development thing that we have to do. And I set the program in motion. And I'm fully able and ready to do this and to carry it out. The other party merely wanted to down me and put me down, and in the process putting down the state of California, and in the process putting down all of the people of California, you know, which is quite strong. And he says, but I'm here to do my job, and if you let me do it, we'll get out of the hole in no time. So as I was walking past the newsstand today, I noticed that the federal the judges 11 judges on some panel voted that they would delay the recall election. And they were delaying it, and they didn't say why. But, of course, it's because of all these things that are coming up. And I think it'd be a fascinating thing to be aware of. But more so, Gray Davis's attitude is, hey, I'm the governor. I'm going to do my best. And the other people's attitude is, you didn't do good enough. You didn't do this. Well, how could you? Everybody made mistakes when the market was so high and all of a sudden it tumbled, you know. Everybody made a mistake. You're blaming me for something that is universal, but that's okay. Whatever you say of me, I know I did my best. Now, that's an attitude. That's an attitude. Now, that man, if he doesn't go down in history as being an outstanding person, I'll miss my bet. Because it's just like Nixon. They knocked him. He got caught for doing things that everybody else did, but it was time. They put the things to work at that time. And Gray Davis, he was there at the moment when the kaput came, you know. And it was tough. It was tough. Now, what's happening with Bush? The same type of thing. The same type of thing. He did what he felt had to be done. He did what he felt was required of him as the commander-in-chief of the American forces. And he did it. Now, whether you or I think he's right, he did what he felt what was right. And that's what we elect people to office for, to do things that they feel is right. That's what we elect you, each of you, to be human beings, to do what you feel is right. Not what you think would make other people happy, not what you think you should do, not what you think is going to build points or get votes or something for you, but what you think in your heart is the right thing to do. This is the attitude that makes winners. This is the attitude that makes divine beings out of human beings. Have a lovely evening. I love you very much, and I see each one of you filled with joy and peace and harmony and all the blessings that life has for you. I love you. I love you. I love you.